Percy blinked. Well, that hadn't been what she'd been expecting. Beside her, Aradale inhaled sharply, then didn't seem to be breathing at all as he took in the sight. Milan's head, completely transparent, cocked, and she looked down at them with a maternal cast.
"Speak,"
she whispered.
"What?"
Aradale cleared his throat.
"Is what Constable Combs has told me true? Could one of your kind really be behind this?"
"Ba'alm is a lost soul," Milan said. "Tortured by a broken mind and a twisted spirit. Yes, she is of us, human. Thy task is not easy, but we shall aid thee in thy desperation."
"Great," Aradale said. I guess that's the confirmation I needed."
He hesitated.
"Could you, by any chance, put in a good word for me with Harmony?"
"Thy deeds are thy own good words, human," Milan said, "and thy God knows of them. Go and protect this city. Worry not for thyself, but instead for thy fellows."
"Right, right," Aradale said. "I'll just be about it then. Unless there's anything more you can tell me."
"Thy snoring," Milan said, "is rather loud."
What?
"It doth be like unto 100 angry kolos," Milan said, "in the middle of a rock slide. Lo, and it doth come near to waking the dead."
"Right,"
Aradale said.
"Be on thy way, human,"
Milan said.
"As commanded. Lieutenant Combs, a moment."
He bowed his head to Milan, walking around her to the side, and had trouble tearing his eyes off her. Granted, Maracy had trouble doing the same. Milan was overwhelming even when she wasn't transparent and half-naked. Milan nodded Maracy onward. No need to come back up for her. When they were halfway down the stairs, Aradale let out a deep breath.
"Well, that was strange."
"I did warn you,"
Maracy noted.
"That you did. A bit about snoring. A metaphor, I assume. But for what? The constables were too loud, perhaps?"
He nodded to himself.
"We're supposed to serve the people, but the complaints of brutality and of officers ordering people around as if they were lords. Yes, I can see. I'll need to make some changes. Do you think that's what she meant?"
"I don't know," Maracy said carefully. "Meeting her does tend to affect one in profound ways."
"Very true."
Aradale hesitated on the steps, turning as if he longed to return up above. He held himself back.
"The question I had earlier remains. We've got an immortal killer out there, potentially trying to overthrow the government. How in preservation do we fight something like that?"
"You don't," Maracy said. "Lord Waxillium will handle the Chandra. We should focus on keeping the city from exploding."
Aradale nodded.
"I want you to do something for me."
"Sir?"
They still stood in the stairwell, lit by a solitary electric light above them.
"You mention Lord Ladrian," Aradale said. "He seems to trust you, Lieutenant."
"We have become good friends over the last year."
"He's a wild card, Lieutenant,"
Aradale said.
"I appreciate the work he does, but his methods... Let's just say I wouldn't mind having a little more information on what he's doing and when."
"You're asking me to spy on him?"
Aradale shrugged. Another man might have been embarrassed to be confronted with it so bluntly, but he didn't seem so.
"I won't lie to you, Combs. I think you can be a resource for this department in more ways than one. It's my job to see that the law in this octant is served. And I'll feel a hell of a lot better if I know what Lord Ladrian is doing. If only so I can get the proper warrants, and if necessary, apologies ready."
"I see,"
Maracy said. Aradale waited for something more. She could practically hear the implication. You are a constable, Lieutenant. This is your job. Do as you are assigned.
You could just ask him, she said. He's been deputized. He is technically under your jurisdiction.
And you don't think I've tried? He always promises a report. If I'm lucky, there consists of a letter telling me where he left a suspect hanging by his ankles. Do you remember that one? Or a quick rundown at a party of something he's hunting, if only so he can ask me for the loan of some resources. I don't mean to turn you into his chaperone, but honestly, a little more information would be wonderful.
Maracy sighed.
I'll write you a weekly report. More frequently if an investigation is ongoing as it is now. But I will inform him that I'm doing so.
Great. Fantastic.
Ardell started down the stairs again, stepping quickly and speaking almost as fast.
Get to the governor's place and tell him I need an executive order for martial law tonight so I can clear the pubs. Suggest you send one to each of the Octants. Then check in on your friend Ladrin and tell me anything he's learned about this immortal who thinks she can bring down our city.
He reached the floor below and strode out into the main chamber, shouting for a report on the number of constables they've been able to call up for duty this night. Maracy followed more slowly, legs feeling like they bore 100-pound bracers.
You can be a resource for this department in more ways than one.
She reached the ground floor and walked out the precinct's back door. She'd always known that her involvement with Waxillium had helped her obtain this job. If she hadn't joined his hunt for Miles' 100 lives, she'd never have gained enough notability. That said, she'd assumed her understanding of historical crime rates, her letters of recommendation, and her interview had been more important. Was that even the case? Had Aradel given her the job instead of someone like Reddy because she knew Waxillium? Did her studies even matter? She settled with her back against the wall, waiting for Milan. Rusts. Did everything always have to be about Waxillium? Of course, thinking that made her feel like a child, jealous that someone else had more blocks than she did. Milan strolled into the alleyway a short time later, disturbing the mists.
Well?
Milan asked.
How did I do?
We shall aid in thy desperation? Maracy asked.
Hey, it's what he expected.
Not what I expected. Milan sniffed.
I can be divine when I need to be. I've had a long time to practice.
Then why don't you use the act around me and the others?
Who says this isn't the act?
Milan said. She met Maracy's eyes.
Perhaps my duty as one of Harmony's servants is to show people what they need to see, whatever will bring them the most peace.
Maracy felt cold suddenly, a shiver running through her. Not at the words, but at the look in Milan's eyes, which had faded to a faint translucence. As if in reminder? Then Milan threw back her head and started laughing.
Nah, I'm just rusting you, kid. I don't show you that side because it's too hard to keep a straight face while talking with all those these and what fors.
Hence the snoring wisecrack? Maracy said.
Yeah. I had to check on the guy when Harmony was first looking for Pa'alm. He snores like a steam engine, that one. Anyway, where to now?
The governor's mansion, Maracy said.
Along we go, then,
Milan said, striding toward the exit of the alleyway.
We pulled to a stop,
Chapau said, hunched up next to his carriage in the mists outside the soother's place.
And I'd been hearing things inside the coach. I didn't like how he'd come out of that church with hands all red.
Wax knelt in the back of the coach, listening while he carefully unwrapped a bundle of black cloth. A lantern hung on the side of the coach, giving him light, but also turning the mists into a bloom of illumination. He could still feel the soother's touch from the nearby building, but it was far less pronounced now. He felt almost like himself. That was both good and bad, for there was nothing to hold back his sense of revulsion as he unwrapped the bloody mallet that had been used to pound the spikes into Father Bin.
I shouldn't have looked into the coach, Chapau said. He told me not to look, you know. But I couldn't help it. So I turned softly and peeked in the coachman's slot.
The one they have so you can see if the person inside is ripping the upholstery or whatnot. I found I hadn't been carrying a man, but a monster. A mystery, with bones and sinew exposed, and a face of stretched muscles and grinning teeth. It looked at me, all smiles, and scrambled up toward the hole. It pressed that exposed eye against the slot, and then it changed. It changed. Skin grown over its face like mine. A twisted, broken version of me.
He started weeping again. Wax unrolled bones from the bundle, the corpse of the Pathian whom Bleeder had imitated in order to kill Father Bin. Bleached, picked clean, and under them a pile of cloth. Pathian robes? Yes, the colors were right.
Hands all red,
Chappelle whispered.
You ran after that?
Wax asked, lining up the bones carefully.
No, I drove,
Chappelle said.
I whipped the horses forward, bearing that demon spawn in my coach. A driver for Iron Eyes himself. What good would it do to run? It had my soul. Harmony, it has my soul.
No, Wax said. It's a trickster, a false face, Chappelle. It was a twisted version of yourself, you say?
Milan had said that older Chandra could often approximate a face without having the right bones, but it was always noticeable.
Yeah.
The man huddled down lower in the alleyway.
I know what you think, Lawman. I killed that priest tonight, didn't I? I went mad and I killed him. And those bloody hands are mine. Should have killed myself. Jumped off that bridge.
No, Wax said. You've been taken in by a charlatan, Chappelle. It wasn't you.
The man just whimpered. Wax continued, methodically laying out the evidence, though a part of him wondered what good it would do. Did traditional detective work have any place in a fight against a creature like this? How did you fight mythology with a microscope? Harmony. What if he did find a clue? If he chased her down, could he even defeat something like this? He stared at the bones, then shook his head. He would send for a crime scene team to look this over. He needed to get to the governor's mansion and check in.
Wait,
he thought, then leaned forward. There, on the hem of the robe. What was that? He shielded the lantern, causing Chappelle to groan and huddle down farther. With the lantern dimmed, Wax spotted it better. The corner of the robe's hem glowed with a soft blue light, easy to miss. Wax reached down, taking a substance off the robe and rubbing it between his fingers. A powder of some sort? What kind of powder gave off its own light, faint though it was?
Did you see anything glowing back there, Chappelle?
He asked, turning toward the man. Wax had to unshield the lantern to get him to respond. Even then, the only reply he got was a confused shake of the head.
Where did you drive the coach? Wax asked.
Lestib Square,
Chappelle whispered.
Where I'd been told to drop the creature off. Then I squeezed my eyes shut and waited. It climbed up to me as it left. Hands on my shoulders, head beside mine, cheeks touching. I could feel the blood, though it left none staining my shirt. It whispered to me, Lawman. I will make you free. When I opened my eyes, it had gone, leaving those bones in the passenger compartment along with a small pile of coins. I thought for sure I'd gone mad.
Wax downed an extra vial of metals to refill his stores, then dried the vial out and took a sample of the dust. Lestib Square, named after the Lord Mistborn. It was worryingly close to the governor's mansion.
Don't worry. I'm on the thing's trail. I intend to stop it.
It said it would make me free,
Chappelle said.
If I'm not mad, then that means that thing was real.
It is, Wax said.
Honestly, sir, I'd rather be crazy.
Wax said, rising and pushing Chappelle toward his coach. The thing probably doesn't want you dead anyway.
Probably?
No way to tell for certain, Wax said, checking his ammunition. But I'd bet money against it. At least it no more wants you dead than it wants everyone in the city dead. Maybe. Not sure yet what its endgame is. Chappelle looked sick. Damn. He was sure that last part had been comforting. Go home, Wax said, then tossed the man a few banknotes. Or go find a hotel. Get some sleep. She isn't going to come for you. She had much bigger game to hunt. The lower left quadrant of the broadsheet, The House Record. Guest editorial. The nuisance of negligent coin shots. In the last 16 months, I have replaced 3 lampposts, an iron gate, and 2 steeple spires, all at my Marion Ways house. My residence in the 6th octant, much nearer the hub, has needed twice that attention, due to it being on the main route of coin-shot couriers. Motor cars, carriages, bronze statues. None of these is safe from similar fates. Must our fine neighborhoods look like a return to the world of ash? No. Let us take back our dignity. Continued on back. Visitors from other worlds. Rarely does the House Record bring news of the sensational, but the reputable Lady Nicelle Sauvage of New Saran has contacted us with a report that will shock you. I was lost in the mountains south of the Southern Roughs, said Sauvage, and my fellow travelers had either left me or died. That's when I came upon a mountain pool of the most perfect blue, fed by the melting snows of the heights. Harmony, but I thought I'd reached paradise. As twilight struck early, as it is wont to do in the mountains, Sauvage saw a hunched figure by the pool. Just a shadow, really, she said. Piercing eyes, and a face like some otherworldly beast from one of those hideous pulp stories. I regret to say I hadn't the courage to engage this visitor. Instead, his horrible visage struck right at my heart. I let preservation instinct take over and ran for an hour before making camp elsewhere. The Sinister Soiree. I described my assailant as wearing a striped white suit, but that is not as specific as it may seem. In Ellendel, someone dressed as described would stick out like afternoon tea among kolos. But in New Saran, the men run about in such vibrant suits that one would almost think they are all performers late for the circus. So I will be more specific. The gunman also wore mustaches, waxed straight, horizontal to a perfect point. The women on both sides of him stood back not only because he had brandished a gun, but also because they feared losing eyes to the sharp and glistening facial hair. I burned what little tin reserves I had left. You will recall that I detailed the episode last week in A Sport of Spirits, where I had been forced to flare most of my tin to counteract the effects of winning a gentlemanly impromptu wine-sipping contest earlier in the evening. "Stand down, sir," I said, cursing myself for leaving glint in my outer jacket, taken by the servant when I'd entered the party. Had I become so soft since leaving the Roughs that I felt comfortable enough without glint on my very person? Never. Unconsciously, I knew that even without my trusty sidearm, I was a match. A war to end the world. A love to span eternity. Sabler Fills and Buissonomes presents A Hero for All Ages, the new historical operetta on stage now at Clairvance Theatre, 1818 Bonweather Way. 16. Wax perched on an electricity pylon overlooking the governor's mansion, a clean white building brightly lit in the mists by floodlights. Those didn't shine so strongly tonight, and their brightness tonight seemed to indicate that Innate was worried. The crowds were not dispersing. Men roamed the streets. There seemed to be more of them than there had been earlier, though the clock had struck midnight soon after Wax had left the soothing parlor. He'd stopped by his house to rebind his arm wound, chew down some painkillers, and pick up some supplies. His hat, his short-barreled shotgun, and his thigh holster. He'd considered sending someone for Lord Harms, but honestly, Wax wanted him safe where Bleeder couldn't use the man against him. Better that he stay hidden on his rooftop. In fact, he'd been half-tempted to go fetch Steris and drop her somewhere similar. Time was short, unfortunately. He had to trust that the constables watching her would keep her hidden. From there, he'd walk the streets a short time, listening. He'd overheard anger at the government, vitriol for the Pathians. Those complaints were bad enough, but mixed with them was a more disturbing trend. Anger, but with no focus. General discontent. The grumbling of men over their beers, of youths out on the street throwing rocks at cats. Hiding amid it all was a murderer, like a lion in the grass. At least the governor's mansion looked calm. He'd come fearing the worst, a strike on Innate while he was away. "She's got me pinned," Wax thought with dissatisfaction, as the breeze rustled his mist coat. "I can't stay and protect the governor because I have to follow leads and try to figure out her plan. But I can't be as effective in that hunt because I keep worrying that I'm leaving Innate exposed." Could he convince the governor to hide? Beneath his feet, electricity ran like an invisible river through the suspended cables. Spirits that moved like allomancers in the sky, hopping from building to building.
"Ah, lawman," a voice intruded upon his thoughts like a nail into a board. "There you are."
Wax reached to his waist for vindication. Where? This had to mean Bleeder was close, right? Watching somewhere?
"Do you know," the voice said, "about the body's remarkable defenses? Inside there are tiny bits of you that men never see. Even surgeons don't know of them, for they're too small. It takes a refined taste to distinguish them, know them. What is it that your friend likes to say? Ain't nobody what knows the cow better than the butcher?"
Wax dropped down from his perch, slowing himself by pushing on a discarded bottle cap. Mists churned around him, drawn by his allomancy.
"If a tiny invader enters your blood," Bleeder said, "the entire body begins to spin around it, to fight it, to find it and eliminate it. Like a thousand fingers of mist, like a legion of soldiers all too small to see. But what is very interesting is when the body turns upon itself and these soldiers run wild, free."
"Where are you?"
Wax asked loudly.
"Close," Bleeder said. "Watching. You and the governor. I will need to kill him, you know."
"Can we talk?" Wax asked a little softer.
"Isn't that what we're doing?"
Wax turned, walking in the night. Either Bleeder would have to follow, which might let him catch motions in the mists, or he'd get far enough away that she couldn't hear to reply to him, which would tell him which direction to search in.
"Are you going to try to kill me?"
Wax asked.
"What good will it do to kill you?"
"So you want games?"
"No,"
Bleeder sounded resigned.
"No games."
"What then?" Wax asked.
"Why bother with all of this showmanship?"
"I'll free them. Every one of them. I'll take this people and I'll open their eyes."
"How?"
"What are you, Waxillium?"
Bleeder asked.
"A lawman,"
Wax said immediately.
"That's the coat you're wearing right now, but it's not who you are. I know. God knows I've seen the truth in you."
"Tell me then,"
Wax said, still walking through the mists.
"I don't think I can. I might be able to show you."
Bleeder didn't seem to have trouble hearing, though Wax had softened his voice. Allomancy? Or did she just have the ability to make ears that worked better than human ones? He kept searching. Perhaps one of those dark windows in the government building nearby? Wax headed that way.
"Is that why you're targeting the governor, then?"
he asked. "You want to bring him down? Free the people from the government's oppression?"
"You know he's just another pawn."
"I don't know that."
"I wasn't talking to you that time, Waxillium."
He hesitated in the mists. The office building loomed before him, the windows 100 hollow eyes. Most of those windows were closed, a common practice at night. No need to invite the mists in. Religion could say what it wished, and people believed, mostly. But the mists still made them uncomfortable. There, Wax thought, picking out an open window on the second floor.
Very good, Bleeder said,
and Wax saw something shift just inside the window, ambient light barely sufficient to let him discern it.
Ever the detective.
I'm not much of one, actually, Wax said. In the roughs, you solve fewer cases with investigation than with a good pair of guns.
That's a fun lie, Bleeder said. Do you tell that one at parties to youths who've read too many stories about the roughs? They don't like hearing about interrogating family members of a man gone bad, tracking down gunsmiths to see who fixed an outlaw's rifle, digging through an old campfire after days spent on the road.
How do you know about things like that? Wax asked.
I do my homework. It's a Chandra thing, which I assume Milan explained. Whatever you claim, you're a good investigator. Maybe an excellent one, even if you are, by definition, a dog chasing its own tail.
Wax walked right up to the base of the building, the mist thinning between him and Bleeder, who skulked just inside the window about 10 feet up. Her face, though enveloped by the shadows, seemed wrong to Wax, shaped oddly.
Have you asked him?
Bleeder whispered from above, barely audible in the night. She had a rasping, dry voice like the one in his head.
Who?
Harmony. Have you asked why he didn't save Lessie? A whisper at the right time, telling you not to split up. A warning in the back of your mind, telling you not to prowl down that tunnel, but instead circle around behind. You could have saved Lessie so easily with his help.
Don't speak her name, Wax hissed.
He's supposed to be God. He could have snapped his fingers and made Tan drop dead on the spot. He didn't. Have you asked why?
Vindication was in Wax's hand a moment later, pointing up toward that window. His other hand felt at his gun belt for the pouch that held the syringes. Bleeder chuckled.
Ever quick with the gun. If you speak to Harmony again, ask him. Did he know the effect Lessie had on you? That she was what kept you out in the roughs? Did he know, perhaps, that you'd never return here, where he needed you, as long as she was alive? Did he, perhaps, want her to die?
Wax fired. Not to hit Bleeder. He just needed to hear a crack in the night. That sound, so familiar, of breaking air. The bullet left a trail in the mist, and the wall beside Bleeder popped, scattering flakes of brick.
Rusts. He was shaking.
I'm sorry, Bleeder whispered, for what I have to do. Cleaning the wound is often more painful than the cut itself. You will see and understand once you are free.
No, we...
The mists churned. Wax stumbled back, swinging his gun toward something that had passed in a blur, leaving a corridor of swirling mist. Bleeder, moving with ferrochemical speed. Toward the governor. Wax cursed, swinging Vindication behind him and planting a bullet in the ground, then pushing in a powerful burst. He launched through the mists toward the blazing light of the governor's grounds, sweeping over the gates, startling a small flock of ravens which scattered into the air around him. Two shots rang out in the night. As Wax crossed the grounds, he spotted Bleeder on the mansion's front steps, wearing a body-length scarlet coat. The guards at the front doors lay dead at her feet. In the glow of the electric lights, he could see what was wrong with Bleeder's face now. She wore a black-and-white mask. The marksman's mask, but twisted, broken up one side. She ducked into the building, not using her speed any longer. Wax landed beside the bodies. He didn't have time to check them for life, and growled as he shoved into the building, gun out, and checked right, then left. The house steward screamed, dropping a tray of tea in the entryway as Bleeder skittered across the floor and into the next room. Wax followed, the main door ripping from its frame and flying out behind him into the night as he pushed against it and its hinges to cross the room in a half-run, half-skim. He burst into the next chamber, a sitting room, with Vindication out, spinning the cylinder to one of the gun's special haze killer rounds. A thug shot, extra heavy slug, built to deliver as much force as possible. The room he